The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
One of the jewels of Boundless Way Sangha treasure is that there are 5 transmitted teachers, 4 of which are up in front of the room here serving as teachers for this Sangha, and the other as Tanto. This is a treasure, this is a jewel, because like a jewel in the sunlight, when you twist it, you see different facets sparkling. Each one of us brings a unique perspective, a neat view to the Dharma to present. Each of us have different levels of experience, wisdom, knowledge. But each of us, we are all 5 equal in Buddha nature. We've been looking into, or actually, that's not a good word. I would say we have been absorbing a koan. Koans are not puzzles, not pieces of literature to investigate. Koans point directly to our lives. And even if this koan that we've been reading together, working with, appears opaque, that's still the place where it needs to be for you. We're not here reading koans so that we can investigate them and understand them. There's no special knowledge required, no special knowledge or knowing about Buddhism or Zen or koans themselves. The only true knowing is knowing of your heart. And the way we do that is we open the heart. And so I'm going to read the koan again. And I encourage you, as I read it, to consider this. This koan was written for you. Not you as a collective you, but you, the one who's hearing my voice. The events that happened, whether they happened or not, appear here and now. Juedo, the collector of these, did not do this collection for the sake of notoriety. He did it for you, for your awakening. So, when you hear the words, the Dharma is what arises. The Dharma of confusion, the Dharma of clarity, dullness, and awakening. Stay with that, just as that. So this is case 29 from the Blue Cliff Record. A monk said to Da Sui, "When the thousands of universes are all together and utterly destroyed in the Kalpa fire, I wonder whether this perishes or not." "This perishes," said Da Sui. "If so," persisted the monk, "does it follow the other?" "It follows the other," said Da Sui. Anytime I read a text like this, whether it's a religious text, spiritual text, or mythological, and things like kalpas or eons, great, great, great spans of time are introduced, I find it's for a reason. according to Wikipedia, a kalpa is 4.3 or so billion years. But that's not the point. In my view, that this kalpa is used to settle the mind, the time-bound mind. The kalpa points to the infinite present moment, for which there is no beginning, middle, or end. When we hear a kalpa, or I hear a kalpa, it's like gazing out into the night sky with the billions of stars. Something quiets and settles. Not a feeling of insignificance, more a feeling of awe, that there I am, no different than the galaxies. And so a kalpa begins here. The middle of a kalpa is here. The end of a kalpa is here. And the void of a kalpa is here. And the great fire is here. We hear, especially today, the world is on fire. The world is on fire. Wars, conflict in Ukraine, in Gaza, conflict in Africa. According to some of the recent polls that there are about 112 global conflicts or conflicts around the globe. Humans killing, humans suffering. The fire. Communities on fire. The threat of nuclear annihilation. The fire. Nature being assaulted, burned now as we speak in Canada. And the quiet fires, the fires of our heart, the fires of the loss of a loved one or dear friend, the fires of the realization that we are growing old and don't have much time left. And of course, the fires here in this room, 18 burning flames on a cushion. These are the fires of our practice. These are the fires of all our misgivings, our fears, our longings. All of it. When we gather together in stillness, when we gather together in community, in silence and in motion, and during our Dharma dialogues, there's a reverence, a stillness, a civility. But let's not forget, the distance between this civility, this upright stature and calmness, and each of us clawing each other in the throat is a thin layer of cerebral material. We are wild. We are animals. We are nature. We are the stars. We are the galaxies. We are the explosions. It's hard to recognize in our practice as we sit in stillness. The flames may be burning hot. Or they may be simmering like hot coals. Our bodies aching. The bodies that we share with all bodies, all animals, all beings. even the plants, the rocks, the dirt, and the stars. All burning, boiling, broiling. And it's our practice that holds us, helps us see this burning, is not a problem, is not an error. As I've heard Melissa Roshi say, it's not a bug, it's a feature. This burning is the burning that is the fabric of reality. There's no escape. The kalpa fire is always here. Turning one moment into the next. And what perishes? This perishes. And it follows the other. One moment to the next. The whole universe turning around. The scientific definition of combustion, the burning, is that it requires three elements: a fuel, heat, and oxygen. And we can see our practice in this way. The fuel is all our anxiety, our misgivings, our questions, all the things we bring to the cushion, all the things that arise from the cushion. And the oxygen is our attention, our loving, open-hearted attention. Wide open. There is no limit to our attention. And the heat is the form of our practice, the container, the holding, the intention to stay still when everything in us wants to move, to wipe the snot off our nose, to scratch the itch, to relieve the pain. As we've said, often you hear in the Sangha from the teachers, this is not a project for the self. This is not something that we do for ourselves. We do this for the world. Because we are the world. And this fire that it comes from the combustion is a signal. A signal of change, of transformation. It happens with us or without us. But our project here in Zen is to meet our lives and enter the flow, enter the fire, enter life. What perishes? What perishes? Only the views of us as separate individual selves. Or as A.E. Housman said, alone and afraid in a world I never made. This delusion, which causes so much suffering in the world, this is what perishes. We are all bodhisattvas, whether you realize it or not. We've taken this path. We've just recited the four bodhisattva vows. And the bodhisattva path is the path of fire, of walking the fire. I remember in the 80s and 90s, these television commercials with Tony Robbins doing these retreats where you'd have people on a beach walking through fire, hot coals, and even had Oprah Winfrey do it. That's child's play. That's nothing compared to the bodhisattva path. Giving your all, throwing yourself into the fire. The numberless beings right in front of you. We don't free them by standing outside the fire. We free them from within, We can only meet someone's suffering with our suffering. To stand above someone, to say, I've put out my fire, I don't need this, I can take care of you, is charity. Nothing wrong with charity, but that's not saving all beings. The word compassion literally comes from the words to suffer with. The compassion that we feel standing in the fire. To end delusions is to let all those things we've held dear, all those views, everything we've held on to, burn. Burn in the loving attention of our practice. And the most pernicious, troublesome view is the view of us as separate. And the Dharma gates we need to enter, we walk right into. Of course, we prefer the ones with the little flower boxes and the nice picket fences, but the real Dharma gates, the ones we've been avoiding, are a cauldron. I think it was Hakuin who said a certain amount of suffering is required. And to walk the Buddha way, to embody the Buddha way, is to let the fire mold you, shape you into a vessel of compassion and clarity. It may seem that these vows are too much, that the heat and the fire is too much, but these vows are not yours. They are life, lifing through you. They are the fire of the universe. Your pain, your suffering, is the universe expanding and living through you. What perishes? This perishes. And it follows the other. I want to end my talk by reading a poem. This is T.S. Eliot, an excerpt from Little Gidding. The dove descending breaks the air with flame of incandescent terror, of which the tongues declare the one discharge from sin and error. The only hope or else despair lies in the choice of pyre or pyre, to be redeemed from fire by fire. Who then devised the torment? Love. Love is the unfamiliar name behind the hands that wove the intolerable shirt of flame, which human power cannot remove. We only live, only suspire, consumed by either fire or fire. Thank you. So please make yourself comfortable and let's make a horseshoe or a U. And you know what to do. If so moved. Well.
Thank you. It was an extraordinary talk, Michael. Really very beautiful and moving. And I just had just one of those, like, duh moments. Where, you know, something that I'm sure is in the liturgy and you've been saying it all along, and it just somehow came to me as when you said, you know, we don't do this for ourselves, we do it for the world. And I just, what became clear is, oh, thank goodness, this is so much easier. I mean, it's impossible. I didn't, you know, I came here with my problems, and I've been trying to, you know, in some way, even when I pretend not to be, but if it's not for me at all, it's like, oh, gosh, oh, that's just like, thank you.
I sense your relief, and yeah, I feel it too. It includes us, of course. The world includes us. But yeah, when that little me is at the center, it's so heavy. Melissa was mentioning holding the rock as it, you know, drowns you. You know, yeah, wonderful. Thank you.
Well, and I think this the Bodhisattva vows arising in Mahayana Zen. Sometimes things like, oh, that's such a burden, I have to, but I think you're pointing to this is what arises in the human heart as it wakes up. This is not something you have to make up, and when we feel that energy, it's so much stronger and so much more fun than trying to save ourselves, right? It's like, we're all hopeless, you know, give up. You are not going to be better. I am not going to be better. And then there can be a joy in this. So, no, I'm going to go to another sashin and another card. But I get to be here. We get to be here, sled dogs, right? Pulling, doing this work of the heart that the heart was designed to do. For all beings, with all beings. A wondrous thing.
Yeah, Beverly.
Thank you for the talk, Michael. Can you hear me? Is this okay?
A little more, yeah.
I just want to say this has been a gentle morning, and your talk was gentle also, even with the fire, and for however long it lasts, the gentle is good, and I'm ready for other things too.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, sometimes the fire is a smoldering hot coal, and sometimes it's a bursting flame. And each one is life, you know, is this precious one life. And seeing it and entering it is our practice, directly, entering it directly.
That's one of the things that's so great about fire as a metaphor, because it does have this capacity to warm us and comfort us and also burn us up, right? And it's the same substance. But it has all these different functions. So it's, to me, like the Dharma. I find the Dharma comforting and also overwhelmingly pointy and challenging. Whatever comes.
Yeah, I've been having trouble with this koan because whenever I try to think of the fire at the end of the world, it's an abstraction to me. I've seen pictures, I've heard, it's just still an abstraction. So I tried to figure out a fire that I feel within my body, and it's rage. It's rage I've seen in other people, and I've seen it in myself. I've seen people be incredibly cruel to each other and to animals, and myself, it usually comes out verbally. So the question I would ask, if I was character in the story, is, does this stay with us? Does it ever go away? Does it stay with us even after, I don't know, enlightenment? Do we still have these moments of rage? Is it just embedded in us? And that is frightening to me.
It's frightening to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the rage.
And it's the way the forest fire starts. Someone got really mad and threw a match. It's just, it's the beginning of everything, it seems. It's this fundamental rage in us against who knows what.
Right, yeah, fundamental fire, fundamental, the, you know, I think there's a lot what you just said. And I just want to take one little piece of it, is that if we can see this rage is not personal, that this is the fabric of reality, and it's the fire that transcends and comes through everything. And we're here to see that. And just through the seeing, we can maybe momentarily transform it or do something, but either way, it's just seeing and not take it personal. It's here.
And interesting, you should use the example of forest fires, because one of the biggest ones that's burning right now in Arizona was caused by a lightning strike.
Most of them are caused next to highways.
Well, I don't know about that, yeah. But I'm just saying that that what I do know is that it's truly not personal. Yeah. Even the rage that rises up, we do say that we have the teachings about the three poisons, that human beings are subject to greed, anger, and ignorance, endlessly. It's not something that goes away. But when we make a big space for those things, the Buddha talks about the fire of delusion, and he compares it to how you control it is that you bank it. You know, you don't put it out. You just make sure that it stays within a big space, and then it will burn itself out. One of the Mahayana teachings is that greed and anger and ignorance, if we try to smash them down, they just come up again, you know, like fire underground coming up is another forest fire. But if we give them their space, who's not angry about the world situation? I am. I don't want it to be happening. I give you 100 examples. Well, 112.
12.
100, that's, I think, a little bit higher than the last number I saw a year ago. I think it was 108 last year. It's a healthy thing to feel greed, to want it, to the longing that we were talking about. It's really not, it's only a problem when we try to pretend we don't have it. And anger, same thing. It's very correct to say, no, this shouldn't be happening. I don't like it, and feel the fire of that. And ignorance, blankness, that's another thing that naturally arises. So the Mahayana teaching is that when you give a big space to each of these three elemental forces, they begin to transform. And greed, the gesture, I want, turns into love. It turns into connecting. It's a gesture outward, grabbing. And then the big space around it suddenly, if you've ever experienced this, if you ever let yourself just feel the wanting mind activate and then give it that big space, it just melts into love. That T.S. Eliot poem is really interesting, the thing that motivates it all. And ignorance transforms into equanimity. You know, there's just like balance and, oh yeah. And then anger, the power of anger, which a lot of us in the West anyway say you shouldn't feel angry, to allow that energy force, when it starts to transform itself, it turns into wisdom. It cuts through delusion. It's the sword of Manjushri up there on the altar. So to think that we shouldn't feel anger is a fundamental category error. It's really important to say no, to say, I don't want it like this. And then we can clarify that into wisdom and act, do something. Yeah.
And while we're talking about fieriness and energy and love, I want to open up fieriness in us, because for me, it's not just rage, but fieriness is associated with desire
And fieriness is associated with creativity. And when you talk about someone being touched by fire, it's a very positive thing. And you know, all that can come into our practice, all those kinds of fire. It's, you know, when I think of a fiery person, I think of somebody that I would like to know and someone I would probably admire. And so just opening that up and opening up the fuel of our practice, as Michael was talking about it, to include joys and to include our responses to beauty, all that's there.
And clearly you've touched something here, but for me, where I go with this is the necessity for humility. You know, anybody who says, you know, I've done the work, right? I would never do fill in the blank, right? That's when I think that we're in real trouble. And we are playing with the fundamental energies of life, which have led to incredible things and led to horrible things. People doing horrible things out of this great fire. So we would do well to be humble and pray to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that we can meet and allow ourselves to be burned up rather than acting out and adding to it. I think it's not a certain outcome, no matter how much training we do. So to approach this training and approach these forces with great respect, not a small thing.
One last thing on this, because it really is so wonderful. Thank you, Anne. We've been saying, I've been quoting Rumi, you know, I want burning, I want burning. The line that follows that in the poem is, be in love with your burning.
With what?
Be in love with your burning. So the being in love is an important, I think that's what we're starting to point to here.
Anne.
I'm sitting here thinking it's like, not trying to, like it's both and. Because I've had a long experience with, I have a mom who recently died, she was 99. And I had to, like, in my time with her, like, question, like, what is love? Like, it gets said, oh, of course people love, but they don't necessarily know how. And then I surprised myself because for a long time I also had to care for her. And I felt it was like both and. Like I clearly showed up and I know I loved her, but at the same time sometimes I was so angry. So I think like both can go on. And sometimes I think in that love there's also like so much, you know, kind of passion and fury and determination, but the word gets used, and you know, I'm still sort of saying, yeah, like what is it, or how do we really do it?
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think the moment we've caged love, we placed it on a pedestal, or made an idea out of it, or solidified it. It isn't love anymore. So yeah, you've touched on something that's really profound.
And I love this, the and, yeah. Right? That do not judge by any standards. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is this and that's that. I really appreciate you talking about the fullness of our experience. It's not just one thing. And I think our practice is broadening and broadening and allowing all of this to be there in ways we can't really understand or sort out, but yet there it is, huh? No doubt. And it does not, we do not need to be fixed, right? This is not, oh, let me clarify this and I'll sort it out. I'll get rid of this part and hold this part. This is holding the whole thing. And it changes us. It transforms us in the process. Yeah. Thank you.
Esther, did you have your hand up?
Yes. I'm smiling because I have to take a bit of a risk to say what
speak up.
Yes, I will speak up. So, when you spoke, Ben, something really resonated with, you know, the rage when it rises in us and in others, and the will it end someday? Will I stop knocking that enraged at things, or angry, or fiery? And so with Anne talking about, you know, that in that response, I know that when it rises in me, it's often when something is really important to me, something I really care about, often with the closest people to me, which I am ashamed to say, but that's where the real fire sometimes rises. And this giving it a bigger space, and opening to the possibility of being kind or compassionate to myself in that moment, rather than angry with myself for being angry.
I just love where this is all going and what you just said. And I think we're a lot of us are making this connection between love and anger. You know, when we love something, we get angry on its behalf. And when we love someone, we're so close. You know, I think about your mother, Anne, and, you know, you wouldn't be so angry with her if you hadn't been. She's your mother, you know, all your life, you knew her. It's so complex and layered. So it's just and after and after and, isn't it? And it's not even two things. It's a multiplicity of things. But the wish that it would finally just end, and you know, Will pointed to this right in the first comment. I came to Sashin, I'm going to mess up what you said, but to speak for myself, when I first started doing Zen, I thought, well, finally, maybe I could be like those Zen people. And instead of this horrible being that I wanted to just get rid of, and the realization of and is that there is nothing that needs to be eliminated. I really mean this. Come to it. That, you know, in the sense of everything is the Dharma. So if you think, I don't want to be angry anymore, you know, because I was taught in the 60s to peace, love, and understanding. It's like you're taking a knife and you're carving away pieces of yourself and pieces of the world. Everything needs to be included. How can we do that? And this making space and seeing the vast creativity that Alan was pointing to. You know, this is not a life of sourness and depression and despair. It is so alive. It's a flame with delight and sadness. We don't have to get rid of anything. That's amazing. So thank you, actually all of you, for pointing that out, everyone who spoke.
Last one, Michael.
I don't recall your exact words, Michael, but I think something you said, we're of the stars, and through other people's, I mean, from that moment, this feeling has been building in me, just that, you know, every atom of every piece of solid matter and every single one of us in this silly planet, in this backwater galaxy, in this, is forged in a star. May everything, you know, everything, and that the fortune, the odds of this, you know, thing I'm in ending up with you beautiful creatures in this unlikely situation, and I think it's wonder and gratitude. I think that's what it was that was building. I can't really name it, but it is crazy. Just, I would not have believed it, but here I am. So, thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for your talk.
Yeah, and as you're speaking, the word that comes to me is awe. You know, that what more can be said? Yeah.
And when you said wonder and gratitude, Michael, I felt the entire sangha saying, "We'll take it."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this, you know, this is the Buddhist teaching of how precious it is. Right. Usually you think, oh, I got a life and I've got this and that, and you're like, I have a life. I'm here. Oh my God. Right? And I think our practice can soften us up a little bit, all of us hard cases, to begin to appreciate, oh my goodness, here we are, aren't we? Wow.
Thank you, everyone. Please return and restore the Zendo.